On today's episode of The Book Alchemist with me, Heather Sutty, we're joined by Dr. Rona Morrison. Rona is a retired Scottish forensic psychiatrist, artist and author of her very own memoir. Rona worked for the NHS for more than 30 years and retired at age 55, but sadly, her husband died of a brain tumour the same day. We discuss her work, the books she loves and what she does now in this latest chapter of her life. Rona, welcome to The Book Alchemist.
Thank you so much.
So, you are a forensic psychiatrist.
That's correct.
What is a forensic psychiatrist?
A forensic psychiatrist is a medical doctor. So, I did all the, you know, delivering babies and working in A&E and all that stuff during my training. But I then specialised in psychiatry and then subspecialised in forensic. Forensic, people think scenes of crime, dead bodies. And, you know, it's a bit late for a psychiatrist if you're trying to talk to a dead body at a scene of crime, obviously. So, I didn't know what it was either. So, I went to find out. And I got sent off as a junior doctor to the State Hospital at Kerstairs and Berlinney Prison and various other places. And I realised that forensic psychiatry is about the interplay between mental illness and offending. So it's working with courts, prison, with people who have committed crimes as a direct result of their illness. The voices told them to kill the devil and they killed their next door neighbour because they thought their next door neighbour was a devil, something like that. So it meant doing a lot of expert opinions for court, working in prisons just generally, helping with mental illness there. But my main job was working in the community with mentally disordered offenders who were trying to keep out of trouble and keep well.
You worked for the NHS for 30 years.
Yep.
How long have you been retired?
I've been retired 6 years ago last weekend.
Wow. Your life changed when you retired, didn't it?
Yes. I was able to retire at 55 on full pension, which was a real bonus. So I'd been looking forward to it. But on my birthday and retirement date, my husband died of a brain tumour the same day. And obviously my whole life changed as a result of that. But it's been changed in a really positive way. I've decided I've got to live my life and get on with it and, you know, embrace it. And so it's been an absolute joyride really since. So yeah, some really positives came from a very negative time in my life.
You've also written a book.
I have.
Tell me about your book.
So I was telling you a moment ago that forensic psychiatrists don't turn up at scenes of crime. And so I often used to introduce lectures by explaining what a forensic psychiatrist was and said, I don't talk to dead bodies. And so it was no surprise that I named my book that, because it's a memoir. So my book is basically, it is a memoir, but it's a lot of it's about my work, because that was a big part of my life, obviously, for more than 30 years. And I guess the book was an attempt initially to be a sort of legacy piece for the kids. And then I decided maybe I could do something more positive. Maybe I could actually have an input in terms of mental health destigmatisation, mental health awareness, if I actually tried to get the book out there a bit further. So it then became I'm going to try and spread the word, as it were. And so some of the memoir bit came out and a bit more focus on the work. But it's very much written, lots of short anecdotes. There's no in-depth histories about serial killers or anything like that. It's about the human beings behind the headlines and trying to make sure that people realise this is someone's son or daughter. They didn't ask to get ill. My job was to find them, treat them and rehabilitate them. And so that my mission is to entertain the book. I think it's quite amusing and bizarre and scary and funny. But in amongst it, it's not to poke fun. It's actually to say, these are the funny antics I got up to as a forensic psychiatrist. Mm-hmm. However, the bottom line message is all about don't judge people, see them as a human being.
55 is quite early to retire. What made you come to that decision?
It was a perk of psychiatrists of my era, and we knew you could go on full pension at 55. And it struck me that I'd put a lot of time and effort into working in the NHS, but actually work is only part of your life. Work-life balance is important. Mm-hmm. And actually, I thought it's important. You hear so many people, they work themselves into the ground and then they get ill and they don't enjoy their retirement. Little did I know that would actually happen to my husband because he had just retired. But I thought, no, actually, I love life. I would really like to go travelling. I travelled a lot anyway as a family. But my plan for retirement was to get back to my passion, which was art, which had had to be put to the back burner for about 38 years, I think it was. Mm. So I'd planned to get back to some art, do some travelling, cruising in particular, and see if I could do some voluntary work, that sort of thing.
How difficult was it to pick yourself up when you lost your husband?
I think it was actually easier than I thought it would be. And that was because I think we were very fortunate in that he was diagnosed about 3 months before he actually passed away. And so we had that window of time when I was a sort of full-time carer where we could talk, put things in order for the family, plan what he wanted, etc., say what we needed to say. But we had no regrets because we had travelled the world with our family. We met when I was still at school, so we'd been together a very long time. So we didn't feel we'd been cheated, although we're obviously you're cheated because it was a lot earlier than you would have wanted. But actually, we didn't have any regrets either. And almost you start grieving before your husband dies when you know it's an inevitability. And so when it came, it was a relief. He hadn't had to suffer too long. And so that was actually really important because it felt that was a good ending. He was at home and that was, it was right. It was good. And it was fulfilled time. So it was a case of, right, okay. So we're here. We've done it. What's next? And it was literally like a bookmark in my life. And it was like, that was a good chapter. This is the next one. It doesn't have to be a bad one. It's just going to be different. So what am I going to do?
So your life is very different now.
Yes.
You're able to spend time doing your art. I know that you love cruising because you've been to one of the Bookface events with Doug Allen, who's obviously a polar explorer and has worked widely with Sir David Attenborough. Tell me about what you do with cruising now.
So it's been quite exciting in that my book was published in September 2022. And quite unusually, I was taken on by a publisher who does business books. And so I'm not their genre at all, a medical memoir. And the reason they took me on was during a kind of informal chat with the publisher, she said, and what do you want the book to do? And I didn't, as I told you, legacy piece, then well, actually, I'd like to spread the word. And anything else? And I said, well, I think I might quite like to do cruise line speaking. I love cruising. And I'd love to, you know, if I could spread the word on cruise lines, that would really get the word out there. And she said, well, that makes it a business book then, because your book becomes like a big fat business card. It gives you credibility and it might help you get the work that you want to do. And so I said, oh, yes. And she said, so they signed me on. And I thought, oh, I've got to do this now, actually. And it was kind of a throwaway comment. And so I actively pursued it. Doug Allen, as you mentioned, I met him and I said, I'm off to the Antarctic on a cruise just after I met him. And when I was in the Antarctic on a cruise, I fortuitously met a member of staff who knew someone who booked for that cruise line. And they put me in touch. And about 3 weeks after I got home from my Antarctic cruise, I was booked to go and speak in Japan for 2 weeks on a cruise.
Wow.
And then later in the year, in September there, I was away in Vancouver, Alaska, and across the Pacific down Japan. And then just a few weeks ago, I signed with an agent in Florida, and I've got two bookings already for this year. In a week's time, I'm going to Tampa, across the Panama Canal to LA, and then I'm going to the Caribbean in November. But I've just put in for one for Australia and one for Norway. So, it's going well. It's a long answer, but it's going well.
That's a bit of an understatement.
So, yeah.
That's amazing. And tell me about your art, because you're a very colourful person. Like, I love, you know, you're really, really bright, joyful colours. I love your jewellery and your accessories. So, what's your art like?
So, my art is watercolour or pointillism, which is pen and ink. Pictures made of individual little dots of ink. And I mostly do landscape or pet portraits are their favourite, people ask me for. And I do a lot of buildings, people like wedding venues. People say, could you paint or draw the wedding venue as a present? So I do that kind of thing. It's very detailed. There's nothing wishy-washy. It's very, very detailed work. Bizarrely for watercolour, but it's very detailed. So I do that. And I did sell it in shops and galleries and whatnot pre-COVID. But since then, I have just started doing commissions because actually it's much more rewarding. You get the feedback either directly or indirectly from the recipient, and there's often tears or whatever.
Yeah.
One of my friends asked me to paint a garden with a rose bush in it, which is an unusual thing. And it was the gentleman's, I think it was his 80th birthday, and his wife had passed away, and he had planted a standard rose bush in the garden in memory of his wife. And they asked me to paint it for his birthday with the rose bush in the middle. And it was such a personal thing, and there were tears and everything. And you know, you think that's really it makes you feel good. And if you want people to feel good and have got personal meaning, that makes the art more fun for me.
Amazing. Just want to rewind back to reading as a child, because you're clearly incredibly articulate and creative, but also intelligent. Have you always been an avid reader?
No. No, I feel a complete fraud being on your podcast because, but I think I'm an inspiration to people who don't see themselves as readers, I think. That I played a lot of badminton and like drawing and stuff, and I play like 5-6 times a week and when I was younger and as an adult. So I didn't have a lot of time for reading. I did this sort of Enid Blyton bit, you know, as a child, that shows my age. And then I kind of didn't read very much. And then when I I was reasonably bright at school and I would win book tokens, you know, prize giving. And I said to my teacher at secondary school, I said, right, I've bought the art books and all that, so I need to buy something kind of vaguely intelligent. And they suggested that I buy Souls and Itching. And I had a go at that and that put me off reading for a while. It was too big a jump from Enid Blyton, let's be honest. And so
I mean, I know the name, but I couldn't even tell you anything about that author.
At age 13, 14, it was a bit tough. One was called Cancer Ward and one was, I think, Ivanisevich or something. Oh, anyway. Yes, it was too much at the time. It put me off. And really, I didn't read much at all till I started cruising. I mean, I've been cruising for 20 years. And because I was so busy with my work and I had two kids and I was running them to all their clubs, I just didn't really have time. And I was playing badminton and all that. On the cruise, for the first time ever, I actually had periods, you know, on a sea day when I was just sitting and I picked up a book. But I think reading for me, I was, again, feel quite embarrassed. A lot of your guests will talk about books that have been inspirational and changed their lives and whatever. And actually, for me, reading is quite is kind of just giving me space to turn my brain off. And I read mostly crime fiction and it's just a way of escaping. And I'll just let it wash over me. And it's really, really positive for me. So I don't think it has to be all about self-development and finding yourself. So when I decided to write my memoir, I thought, I have no idea how to write a memoir. What are they supposed to look like? So I read a few at that point. Mostly medical ones, Sue Black and Ian Knott and Adam Kay was a turning point because it's written very conversationally and my style is very much, I'm a bit of a storyteller. I quite like telling me funny stories and things. And the book, that would represent me if it was in that sort of style. So I guess I was heartened by the fact it didn't have to be a great literary work. It was actually nice to know that you could just write something that was kind of honest. And so the Adam Kay's book was a point that gave me permission to do it my way, if you like. So that was good. So it was a turning point, and I could relate to it because I was a junior doctor myself. Yes. So the content was, people go, oh my goodness. And I go, no, that's happened. That's how it was, you know. So, yeah, so that was a turning point for me, but for a different reason.
When you're switching off and you're cruising and you're reading crime fiction, that you enjoy that, don't you?
Yeah.
Yeah. What's been your kind of favourite author that you've read recently?
Well, I'm currently reading Val McDermott. And that there's a link, which I'm sure you know, and that I'm going to your Sip and Swap event at the weekend and I'm going to meet her, which is great. So I thought, that's me found a new author. And I know she's written lots, so that will keep me amused for many a cruise, I think.
Great.
So,
I recently watched, I haven't read the Karen Piri books, but I watched the series, which is on I think it's on ITVX, and it was really good. And also I know that because you've come to some of the Bookface events before, that you have met Graham Armstrong.
Yes.
What was your take on Graham Armstrong? Have you read his book?
I bought it. I haven't. It's in the pile for going away, so I haven't read it yet. But I know from his, you know, the interview with him that he's written it very much in this lingo of Lanarkshire, I think, isn't that right?
That's right, yeah.
So and I think there's something very honest about that approach where someone just writes it and you feel they're sitting with you telling you the story. I think it just has a credibility about it. So I, having not read it yet, I expect that's what I will find with that. And it's quite relatable because you just feel from the little I know of him from the discussion, it's very raw and very real. And you got a wee insight into what's going on in his head and what he's thinking. And I think that's what interests me is not so much again with crime fiction. It's not the crime story. Mm-hmm. It's the character development. So I know that I was listening to your podcast with my friend Madeline Black and you were talking about you don't really do series of books.
You
like, and whereas I'm the complete opposite because the series I like because it's the character development and I like all the relationships in it. I'm not so interested in the story per se. Obviously that's important, but the character development. So a book where you get a sense of the real sense of the author, I think is important. What was interesting for me with my own book was when I went to do the audiobook, I did it because my mum's partially sighted and she wasn't going to get to read the book unless it was in an audio. And I went down to England and I recorded the book and it was a test for me because I thought when I start reading this out loud, if this doesn't sound like me telling the story that I've told my family or whatever, you know, for decades, I've not written it right. But actually, I knew what was coming next because I had written it as I would tell the story. And so I think that's quite a useful thing for an author, I think. Starting out, if you want to do one like that, is read it out loud to yourself. And if it doesn't roll off the tongue, you've not quite captured it, you know. So I think his book's going to be like that. The other one, I'm terrible for names. Was it Call of the Wild? I was at one of your other events where the gentleman had gone off to Alaska.
Yes, Guy Grieve.
Guy Grieve. And I really enjoyed that because, again, you get more of a sense of what was going on for him. It's a very personal story again. So, yes, I guess I like that kind of thing.
Do you miss forensic psychology?
So it's psychiatry.
Correct? Sorry.
Everybody does that, so I just thought I would do it. No, it's fine. I don't miss it per se because I feel I've still got some sort of connection with it, do you know? Uh-huh. Because I'm sort of retelling the stories, and obviously they're all anonymised and there's no names and stuff, but and they're just little snippets of things that happened. It still brings it back to me. But I think, I mean, it's really heartening. I've had patients have left reviews on Amazon and leave messages on my Facebook page and things like that. And, you know, you think, a patient even turned up at one of my talks recently.
Wow.
And it was lovely. It was just really nice. You've had some sort of positive impact that they keep that contact going, you know. So. Yeah. So, and I still meet up with my team. We go away every year for a long weekend. They did it for my retirement and they'd booked it a year in advance. And then my husband was ill. He was just about to die, actually. But my daughter said, you need closure, Mum. Go and I'll come look after Dad. And if you can, it's only an hour away, you can come home sort of thing. And we enjoyed it so much. They were so sensitive. It was lovely. We were together for nearly 20 years, the whole team, and we've kept it going. Some more have retired and moved away, but we all get together for Friday to Monday once a year, which is nice.
I love your energy and your passion.
Thank you.
So are there any plans to write another book?
There's no immediate plan, but I've got a book in me.
Ooh.
And it, obviously this book finishes, you know, at the end of my career. So it's not a career book, but many people have said to me, oh, and it feels a bit weird saying it, but you know, you're an inspiration. What they're referring to is, I suppose, is the fact I've embraced the fact that I was, you know, I lost my husband, and I've just said I'm going to make something of this. I'm happy. I'm still alive. I'm here. I've got to make the most of it. You don't know what's round the corner, and I think that's the thing. You don't. The best will in the world, you could get run over by a bus tomorrow. So live your life every day to the full. And I absolutely embraced it and believed in it and thought, go for it. And so. There's been lots of really positive things have happened. We've discussed several of them already. So sharing that kind of hope and positivity sort of message about it doesn't need to be the end, it's just a new chapter, that kind of message, I think is quite important. But there's lots of funny things, of coincidences and things that have happened that I think would be vaguely entertaining, hopefully. But that underlying message thing is important to me. Why are you doing it? Why are you writing the book? Is there something you're trying to share with people?
What have you learned about yourself from writing your book?
I think I'm quite resilient. I think it's probably the thing. I've always described myself as a glass half full person. Even, you know, in the health board, you know, if they were trying, I was an associate medical director, so I had a big budget and I was supposed to be, you know, organising, developing services and managing the doctors and all that.
Very stressful.
It was, because when the health service was under pressure to save money, they were asking me to save lots of money, and my budget was all doctors. I mean, how do you save money with? You either make doctors redundant or you don't replace them, but they want you to address the waiting times, and you know it doesn't marry up in your head. And so, yeah, so it was kind of a difficult time. But I was a medical manager for years, because I thought you're either moaning about them, the big them, if you like, or you become part of the solution. And I've always had that mindset: become part of the solution. Because if you're in about it, you can influence it, you know, hopefully in a positive way and see the positives. You know, something's happened, but something... I would never have been a cruise line speaker.
Yeah.
I would never have gone to Antarctica because my husband had health problems before his brain tumour. So I would never have done these things, but I've just thought, go for it. You know, the thought of going to Antarctica myself, you know, when you stand back, you think, what did I do? All right, okay. But actually, I've just done it and then think, well... If you believe you could do it, then you make decisions that make it more likely. If I'd never gone there, I'd never have met the person that put me in touch with the person that
I
ended up doing the cruise line. And, you know, so if I hadn't dared to dream, I would never have mentioned it to the publisher. I wouldn't have been signed and I wouldn't have done it, you know, so.
Absolutely.
So that's
Do you think some things are meant to be?
I do. I mean, I'm not a sort of spiritual person in that, you know, that I think, but at the same time, there's some really weird things have happened to me since my husband died, and people have come back into my life, and you think, I don't know how that happened. It just, and it did, you know, and that's a good thing. Again, it's that embrace it when it happens, go for it, and believe in yourself and believe in humanity, because there's a lot of really positive people out there that can help us and support us, aren't there?
What do you think your husband would say?
Oh my, he was quite a different character from me. So I think he might be quite shocked that I've done all this, actually. Because there's one thing talking about it. A lot of people say, oh, I've got a book in me. But actually going through the process, you can writing, it's quite easy in some respects. But the process of actually the promoting and marketing, I think, is a huge bit that the publisher doesn't do much of that. You have to actively do it. So I know, I think he'd be very proud of me. But I don't know that he would have thought I had it in me. I don't know.
It's interesting that you mentioned about the promotion of it, because that's a huge part, isn't it?
Oh, enormous. Enormous. And I'm in a group. I write that book masterclass thing online to get me over the line, was really helpful. But I ended up with an author community, you know, on WhatsApp type thing. And there's so many have written books, and a lot of them have self-published, whatever. But a lot of them on that kind of, you know, imposter syndrome, doubt themselves. Maybe their personality. I'm quite an extrovert, so I don't mind. But if you're a bit of an introvert, I think it's incredibly difficult.
Yeah.
You know, because I don't mind. I'll go and speak to libraries, universities, colleges, you know, youth groups, schools. I don't care where it is. And if you sell one book or you don't sell any, or you sell 30, the book sales for me is not what it's about. It's about getting the message out there. But it's just, if you're willing to do it, you don't know what's going to happen. You know, I spoke at a library to a book group, and then the next thing that happened was two ladies in the audience went, oh, we're lecturers in criminology. Can you come and speak at the college? And then someone did that and introduced me to the criminology department at the university in Abertay. You know, so it was just fortuitous. But if I hadn't made that first connection at the book group, I wouldn't have done it. And I did a similar one at my old local library where I was brought up. They got in touch a few months later and said, one of our other libraries would like you to do one for Scottish Book Week, but the library's shut just now, so we've hired a barge. So there was a crime fiction writer and myself, so I was just a true crime, if you like, and he was a crime fiction, on a barge going up the canal, you know, for Book Week. And again, that's just people getting in contact with you, do you know? So if you don't put yourself out there and you just don't know who's in the audience, I think that's the
absolutely. And I think it's so admirable as well that, you know, this part of your life, you know, 55 onwards, is so full and so thriving.
I never dreamt it would be, but I think if you've got a plan, you could be disappointed if you don't achieve it. I just went with a positivity of, I'll just embrace whatever comes. So it started off with the art business, and I joined a business group to help promote that, but it was more for social company and structure in the week. And I joined that, and they bought pet portraits and all the rest of it. But then when I wrote the book, I said, do anyone know any librarians? Can you get me into a library? Does anyone know a radio show or a podcaster? And I got 4 radio shows, 4 podcasts. I got a journalist who kindly did an article in the newspaper. In the back of that, I was interviewed by BBC Radio Scotland. And all that happened, and I just went with it. And then it was that kind of that funny conversation and ending up with the cruise line thing. And again, I got on the cruise line and went, I'm an artist. Do you want me to run some art workshops as well? And they went, well, that'd be great. So, you know, and it's, again, it's just that kind of go with the flow thing. I'm here today.
Exactly. And also, you know, you reached out to me by email. You joined my book group and you've been to events. Mm-hmm. And I think that's the thing. It's like saying yes to things, isn't it?
Absolutely. Yeah, don't overthink it. I think a lot of people shoot themselves in the foot by overthinking things and what if and oh, I'm not good enough or whatever. And actually, I came to your book event and gave you a copy of my book, you know. Now, I don't know if you read it or you didn't read it, but I thought, there's a chance, you know. Yeah. And so being willing to sort of give them away sometimes to people that might have some influence or whatever, might be able to help you along the way, doesn't do any harm, does it?
Absolutely. And I love the fact that you voiced the audiobook. You know, I think that's lovely, particularly, you know, because your mum's partially sighted, but also our brains learn in different ways, don't
they? Absolutely.
And it's funny because I prefer audiobooks when it's a memoir, but prefer normal hardback paperback when it's a novel. And I think yours works particularly well in the audio version.
It's interesting you should say that, and thank you. But the gentleman, Ian, who recorded my audiobook, he got in touch with me and he said, I'm still in touch. And he said, you should tell people if they're reading your book, be it an ebook or, you know, a paperback, he said, tell them to get the audiobook just to listen to the last 2 chapters.
Yeah.
And I went, oh, okay. I don't know how easy that is to do, but it's interesting, isn't it? I think memoir in particular, you get a sense of the real person, don't you?
Absolutely. Yeah. My final question, if you could give any aspiring writers and avid readers one piece of life advice, because you have lived a full life, what would it be?
I think the glass half full is, whatever life throws at you, there will be something positive you can learn from it or grow from, and embrace that, because you don't know what's coming next.
Dr. Rowena Morrison, cannot wait for your next book. Have an amazing time cruising, and thank you so much for being our guest today.
Thank you for having me.
If you've enjoyed this episode, please take 30 seconds to rate, review, and subscribe. It really helps. New episodes drop every Thursday. Thanks so much for listening.